All right, last time we finished up the Thomas procession. I think that's where we stopped. You guys almost seem to believe the derivation I gave, the space shuttle electron. Well, it's a little bit the blind leading the blind. I think that's rocket science, as far as I'm concerned, this idea this Thomas had. But it seems to work. It seems to give what the Dirac equation gives, which is the almost ultimate authority, aside from quantum electrodynamic corrections. Oh, I have to turn off the projector thing. Okay. So today, what I want to discuss is transformation of first the remind you about the transformation of the potentials, and then move into directly Lorentz transforming the electric and magnetic fields. So let me start off with a couple of reminders. First of all, remember we have this contravariant derivative operator, four derivative in time and space, which is the derivative with respect to the covariant components and has a time-like component minus del d by d t with 1 over c and minus the gradient operator. And also recall that the contravariant components of the vector potential we found, we made an argument that in Gaussian units, these have a time-like component, which is the scalar potential, and a space-like component, which is the ordinary three-dimensional vector potential. Come on, come all. So to transform the fields, we can basically start from these equations. And I'm going to basically use the potentials to make an argument for how the fields transform. And we'll just start and write these formulas out for some individual components, and as we go, we'll see how these generalize. So first, E in Gaussian units is minus the gradient of phi, and there is a 1 over C compared to SI units in the dA dt term. Okay. So I should maybe remind you at this point that everything we said about Maxwell's equations is still true. It's not like we're going to abandon those in order to make everything look manifestly covariant. But the point is that these are, whenever you see these equations, everything we've done up to now, that's in one inertial reference frame. And to get the general transformation properties, it's nice to have this manifestly covariant form of the Maxwell equations so that then the transformation becomes trivially clear once you have this lambda, this Lorentz transformation matrix. So for this equation, if we write it out like for the X component, that's the component one of our four vector, which goes 0 to 3. This is D1 of A naught, contravariant derivative 1, component 1 for our time component. That's the del phi term minus del phi term. And then we have minus D0 of A1, which is the time derivative part of that, which I can also write in order to put it in a form that we're going to help to, it will help to generalize later. Minus D0 A1 minus D1 A0 with a minus sign out front. And we can do the same for E2, and the pattern will continue in a kind of obvious way. Minus D0 A2 minus D2 A0. And so on. This happens, goes down for all three components of the electric field, etc. And then for the other field, the magnetic field, B is the curl of A in whatever inertial frame we are in. And to write this in a form that we can generalize and make manifestly covariant, this would look like the x component of B, which is B superscript 1 is dAz dy minus dAy dz from the curl, which is minus D2. A3 minus D3 A2. Okay, and similarly, the y component, I'll spare you the algebra, is minus D3 A1 minus D1 A3. And again, we could write B3 as well the same way. And so all of these expressions seem to have start to look very much all the same, and that suggests that the following tensor is what we want to look at. I'll call it F alpha beta, whose contravariant components in terms of the potential four vector is the contravariant alpha derivative acting on the beta component of the potential four vector minus the beta contravariant derivative acting on the alpha component of the four vector. And this is kind of manifestly going to be an anti-symmetric 4x4 matrix or tensor. And we call this the anti-symmetric rank 2 field strength tensor. And so let's write it out fully out. Its contravariant components when I write a matrix, I like to label the indices on the outside of the matrix so I'm 100% certain what I'm talking about. Then it's anti-symmetric, which guarantees its diagonal elements are all zero. We have the ordinary electric field components here in whatever inertial reference frame we're working in. The negatives of those fields go in the top of the electric field, goes in the top row, and the various components of the magnetic field go here, minus BZ, BY, and minus BX. And if you get this far, you can complete the rest by remembering the anti-symmetry of the matrix, BZ, minus BY, BX. If you ever should need its covariant form, that's easy to create using the metric tensor. F sub alpha beta is a contraction with G alpha gamma of F gamma delta G delta beta. And that is basically the same with a couple of minor changes. Namely, E got changed to minus E, and B did not get changed. There is another tensor that we'll be talking about. I want to introduce now because we want to have as many tensors as possible, don't we? Which is called the dual field strength tensor. And this we write with a script F. F, its contravariant components are defined to be 1/2 the contraction with the contravariant Levi-Civita tensor of rank 4 with the covariant components F gamma delta of our field strength tensor. And this matrix, I can just write it, is with the same indices. I won't rewrite the alpha beta indices. It's also anti-symmetric. And now we have the magnetic field, or I should say magnetic induction components here. We have their negatives here. We have E Z here, minus EY, and my indices are getting pretty bad here. Let me try again. And then it, too, is anti-symmetric, minus EZ, EY, minus EX. So you can get this by changing E to B in F, in the nonscript F, and changing B to minus E. So it has the same information, but arrayed in a different way. We'll see how it's useful in a minute. And here again, this epsilon, alpha, beta, gamma, delta is the totally anti-symmetric rank 4 tensor, Levi-Civita tensor. And it has the values epsilon 0, 1, 2, 3 is 1, and so are all other even permutations of 0, 1, 2, 3. So, for instance, this would also be epsilon 1, 2, 3, 0 would be one of the even permutations. Another would be two swaps, an even number of 2x2 swaps, like epsilon 1, 0, 3, 2 would also be 1. But if you have an odd number of swaps, like epsilon 1, 0, 2, 3, that's minus 1. And all such odd permutations of 0, 1, 2, 3 will have minus 1. And finally, epsilon 1, 1, 2, 3 is 0. And so are all elements where 2 or more indices are equal. And if you take a look at that Mathematica notebook I advertised at the start that's in the supplement directory online, you can get this tensor from this syntax, Levi-Civita tensor 4. And then you can simply, on the next line, get any element or make a table, like the way you address individual indices of a 4x4 matrix or any matrix in Mathematica is you have the double brackets, and then you give the values of the indices, except they run from 1 to 4 instead of 0 to 3, which you'll have to remember, right? This will return 1, for instance, and if you did 2, 1, 3, 4, you would get minus 1 and so on, or 2, 2, 3, 4, you would get 0. All right, so we have these two tensors, and now we want to use them to make the covariant form of Maxwell's equations, the manifestly covariant form, in terms of these tensors. I have to admit, in some ways I prefer the potentials because that's just a four vector and we already are used to transforming four vector. But of course then you have to do an extra step of getting the fields from the potentials. But anyway, let's not quibble. Let's just do it and get the covariant, manifestly covariant Maxwell's equations. Thank you, James Clerk Maxwell, wherever you are. And I'm going to only do the microscopic version, meaning no media. Just the fields in vacuum, but with possible sources of current and charge. And if you recall, I'm sure you do, there are two different categories of Maxwell's equations. two of them are inhomogeneous and two are homogeneous. I'll start with the inhomogeneous Maxwell equations. These, don't forget, we're now in Gaussian units. So, first Maxwell's equation in Gaussian units, when there are no media, is the divergence of E is equal to 4 pi rho, instead of rho over epsilon naught that you learned in SI units. It's the same equation, just different units. In our covariant notation, can rewrite this equation. I'll write it as a sum explicitly over I from 1 to 3, because only the spatial components are present here, so I can't use the Einstein summation convention, which only happens if you have the sum running over all four indices. So the covariant derivative di acting on ei, contravariant components, is equal to 4 pi over c times the zeroth component of our four current. If you remember, the zeroth component is C times rho. And if we remember that EI is equal to FI comma zero, that's that first column of our field strength tensor. And if we remember that F zero zero is zero, we can rewrite this in the Einstein convention as the covariant derivative contracted with F contravariant components F alpha comma zero is equal to 4 pi over C J zero. So that's where the first inhomogeneous Maxwell equation became in our covariant notation. Next, we'll do the second inhomogeneous Maxwell equation. Which in Gaussian units tells us the curl of B minus 1 over C dE dt equals 4 pi over C the components of the current density. Which, in the same style we wrote this equation, we can write that as dBz dy, if we look at the x component of this equation, minus dBy dz minus dEx dx0. Is 4 pi over C jx. And now looking at our field strength tensor, we remember BZ is F 2 comma 1. And D by dy is D by dx 2, the contravariant component of the time position vector, which is partial sub 2, and by is minus f 3 comma 1, and d by dz is d by dx superscript 3, which is partial sub 3, and ex is minus f 0 comma 1, and d by dx superscript 0 is d sub 0. And so this equation, what did I call it? I guess I called this equation star. In the notes, this equation reads partial sub 0 f 0 1 plus partial sub 2 f 2 comma 1 plus partial sub 3 f 3 comma 1 is equal to 4 pi over c j superscript 1. Which looks almost like a contraction. And in fact, it does. If I insert 0 in the form d1 f1, 1, which I can do since f1, 1 is 0, then we have this equation d alpha for the x component of Maxwell's second equation here. F alpha comma 1 is 4 pi over c j1. Okay. And of course this carries through for the x, for the y and z components as well. And that clearly is fitting the same pattern we found here, so we can collect all of those, which are actually four equations. Equations 1 and 2 are a set of four equations, which are the inhomogeneous Maxwell equations, partial sub-alpha contracted with the field strength tensor contravariant components F alpha beta is 4 pi over C J beta. And that is the manifestly covariant form of the two inhomogeneous Maxwell equations. Armed with that, if someone gives you the fields in one reference frame, or the field strength tensor equivalently in one inertial frame, you can just Lorentz transform both indices. So there will be two lambda matrices involved to take that into any other reference frame. Well, of course, the inhomogeneous Maxwell equations don't tell you everything. You need the homogeneous ones too to fully define the electric and magnetic fields caused by charges and currents in the universe. So let's now look at the homogeneous equations. That we've come to know and love. Del dot B is 0. I always like that one. And this one's not half bad either. Minus del cross E. Minus 1 over C dB dt is 0. And remember, in Gaussian units, E and B have the same units, which is really nice for relativity. Otherwise, our field strength tensor would look kind of ugly with epsilons and naughts and mu naughts floating around. And so you might not be used to seeing these 1 over C's floating around, but they are there in Gaussian units. So these two equations, by the way, you can obtain them. Here's an interesting point. Can obtain these from the inhomogeneous Maxwell's equations. By the following substitutions, on the left-hand side and right-hand side, replace E in the inhomogeneous equations everywhere by B, replace B in those equations everywhere by minus E, change rho to 0 and change J to 0. And that's one way to get from the inhomogeneous Maxwell equations to the homogeneous ones. And this is exactly the same replacement made to get script F alpha beta from F alpha beta. And so we can jump right to the corresponding version of the homogeneous Maxwell's equations in manifestly covariant form. If we could find enough chalk. Namely, covariant derivative d alpha on, have a hard time with this script f, contravariant components of f alpha beta is equal to 0. Which complements our other inhomogeneous equation, d alpha f alpha beta is 4 pi over c j beta. So the way you usually think of solving Maxwell's equations is that someone gives you your j beta everywhere in space. Now you have partial differential equations to solve. One kind of awkward point about this form, though, is that you have, it appears the way these equations look, like you have different, two different 4x4 anti-symmetric tensors that you have to calculate. And so it'd be nice to have a version of the homogeneous Maxwell's equations with f alpha beta as the unknowns instead of script f alpha beta as the unknowns. And this is equation 11.143 in the text, which I'm going to just state without proving that this version of the homogeneous Maxwell's equations can be rewritten as this contraction. Sorry, it's not a contraction. It's an equation with the individual components, d sub alpha, f sub beta gamma, plus d sub beta, and now all the permutations add d sub beta, f sub gamma alpha, plus d sub gamma f sub alpha beta is 0, is an equivalent to the one I wrote up here, where alpha, beta, and gamma are any three non-equal indices out of our set 0, 1, 2, 3. So for instance, if you had alpha, beta, gamma, 0, 1, 2, this equation would read d0, f1, 2, plus d1, f2, 0, plus d2, f0, 1 is 0. And you can check this, that this is true, which is useful if someone hands you an equation without proving it. At least what I like to do, if I don't want to take the time to actually prove it, I'll at least check it. So if we check this for this case, we would have d by d x 0, superscript 0. Contravariant, derivative with respect to the contravariant time component of f1, 2 plus d by d x1 of f2, 0 plus d by d x2 f0, 1. Is that equal to 0? Well, we can plug in, let me remind you, f alpha beta covariant components are 0 minus ex minus ey minus ez. Ex, ey, ez, 0, 0, 0, minus bz, by, minus bx, x minus by, bz. So we can check these f1, 2, that's right, minus bz. Plus d by dx of f2 comma 0 minus ey plus d by dy of f0 comma 1, that's ex, and so this is minus 1 over c d by dt of bz minus the curl of e z component. And so this checks, and we can erase our question mark. Okay. So summary is, we can regard Maxwell's equations in one of two different but totally equivalent ways, Maxwell's equations in with no media. D'Alembertian acting on potential four vector contravariant components is equal to 4 pi over c j contravariant components of R4 current. And this, though, you have to remember, there are auxiliary equations. There is the charge continuity equation, which is this one. Charge conservation in differential form. And there is the Lorentz gauge condition, to keep in mind as well. And by going to potentials, basically the idea was those automatically solve the homogeneous Maxwell equations. And so by solving these, you solve then Maxwell's equations, although you still have to take derivatives. Or you can use fields and then Maxwell's equations in the most concise form are the contraction d sub alpha with contravariant f alpha beta is 4 pi over c j beta. And then I'll write this in the convenient abbreviated form, contraction of script f alpha beta is 0. Okay. Those are the fields in manifestly covariant form and potentials and Maxwell's equations. So what are they good for? What do they tell us about the world? Well, one thing they tell us about the world is we have some world with some fields, and we could put a charge in that world and let it roam. And this charge might be a particle with some mass, some charge. It's going to experience the fields. Let's now look at relativistic dynamics, the motion of such a particle, and see how relativity comes into that, which is the topic of relativistic dynamics. So what I'm going to do here, of course, we already know these equations. But what I'm going to do is put the basically Newton's second law into manifestly covariant form that's appropriate for relativity. So let's start with Newton's second law as we have learned it. Rate of change of momentum in time of this charge is Q times the electric field plus the velocity divided by C cross B. Again, the 1 over C was not there in SI units, but of course we need it for E and B to have the same units, as is the case in Gaussian units. So, first of all, in case you were wondering, the Lorentz force, this is the Lorentz force. It has the same form in relativity as it does in Newtonian physics. And it's a fine equation. It's still true. Pick an inertial reference frame where you know the electric field, the magnetic induction, and the velocity vector. In an inertial frame, this still tells you the rate of change of momentum with time. Okay. So let me remind you that the relativistic momentum is a 4 vector. We often call this the energy momentum 4 vector. Which has these contravariant components. It has a time component, which is the same in either covariant or contravariant component. And it has the ordinary vector momentum that we're used to as the space component, which is also a mass times the velocity 4 vector. Contravariant components u0 u, and this p0, which is also p superscript 0, is the energy divided by the speed of light, which has units of momentum, its ratio, and of course U alpha is gamma times the time component, is gamma times the speed of light, and the space component is gamma times the ordinary velocity in your reference frame. In my lecture notes, by the way, I wrote this as E, but that could be confused with the electric field, so I suggest changing that to script E if you have printed out those lecture notes. Okay, so we're looking for a version of our dpdt is equal to the force on the particle. We're looking for a version of this that will have simpler transformation properties under Lorentz transformations. But we have a problem, which we also saw when we did Lorentz transformations of velocities, which is, the quantity we're differentiating can be directly construed as part of the 4 momentum of energy and momentum, but we are differentiating it with respect to time, which is just a component of a 4 vector. And it would be so much more beautiful and simple if we would differentiate relative to an invariant, like the proper time. So that's my first argument, that it will be better to work instead of with dpdt, be better to work with dpd tau, where, of course, tau is t over gamma. But what gamma are we talking about? Well, we're in one reference frame and there is a velocity. So when I write gamma here, and in the notes I didn't include this subscript, but that's the gamma we're talking about here. We're in one reference frame at the moment. And there is one gamma associated with the velocity, or I should really say with the speed. So d tau is dt over gamma. And so I'm going to look at the equation for dp d tau, which will be q over c, times gamma c times the electric field, right? plus the space part of our 4 vector crossed into the magnetic induction. Which I could also write as Q over C times, U sub 0 E plus U space part of U crossed into B. And I want to write that in terms of our electromagnetic 4 tensor, field tensor. So for instance, let's look at the X component, and then we'll be able to generalize. Yeah. U has a gamma in its definition. Right. The 4 velocity, the space part is gamma times the velocity. So capital U already has the gamma in it. And that is gamma U.
That's the capital U, that's not lowercase U.
Right. Yeah, I'm trying when I write the lowercase U to have a little tail to it, to the U. Okay, so the X component of this equation says dP superscript 1 d tau is Q over C times F1 comma 0 U subscript 0 minus BY, the Z component of the 4 vector, which is minus U sub 3, and BY is superscript F13, and then we have BZ U sub Y, which is minus U sub 2, and BZ here is then minus F12. Okay, I went through in a little more detail in the notes. You might want to go through that if you want to make sure you see how I converted the X component of this equation into FU elements. So dP d tau, I claim, is Q over C now, F superscript 1, 0, capital U 0, I will add 1, add 0 again, F1 1, U 1. I will next have F1 2, U sub 2, and I will have F1 3, U sub 3. And in this form, we see we have a contraction. We can write this in Einstein notation as dP 1 d tau is equal to Q over C F 1 beta U subscript beta contraction. Okay. And that will clearly generalize for the Y and Z components as well. But we have to see, what about dP0 d tau, which is going to require a little different type of analysis. hopefully get this manifestly covariant form of Newton's second law with electromagnetic forces. So let's analyze the time component of the equation. So I'm going to appeal to an equation back in chapter 6, if you want to double check that section of your favorite electrodynamics textbook. It says that if we let script E equal the mechanical energy in our system, which here I'm really thinking of kinetic energy for a particle, then we have this equation, dE dt, right? The rate at which power, or the rate at which energy changes for the particle's kinetic energy is Q times the electric field dotted into the ordinary 3 vector of velocity. Right? Just force, total force dot velocity. It's the rate of power supplied. And of course, the magnetic part has no component along U because it's a cross product of U with B. So that does not contribute to the change in energy of kinetic energy of the particle. Only the electric field does. And so if we multiply both sides by gamma, we see that this equation looks like dp0 d tau is q over c electric field dotted into the space part of the 4 velocity, for the velocity 4 vector, or a sum over the space components, the 3 space components in this dot product of F0, comma I with the covariant components of the 4 velocity. U sub I. And again, we can add a 0,0 term to this. Recall that F0, comma I are the negative E components, the ith components of our ordinary electric field, the negative of its components. And U sub I are the negative of the 4 vector space components sub I. So adding this extra term F0 comma 0 times U0, which is adding 0 to the equation, will have for the time component of dp0 d tau, q over c f0 alpha contracted with 4 velocity u sub alpha covariant components. Right, because F00 is 0, which now looks okay, I guess didn't I write that equation over here? dp d tau. Anyway, let me just put it all together. This has the same form as we found for the space components, so we can put everything as dp alpha d tau which is m, the mass times the derivative of the four velocity relative to the proper time, is equal to q over c contraction of our field tensor contravariant components with our four velocity covariant components. And that is the manifestly covariant form of Newton's laws in the for electromagnetic fields. And remember, U alpha means d by d tau of the time and position four vector. So everything now becomes very simple, how to go take our information of our fields, our velocities, our momenta, from one reference frame to another. So let's talk a little about these, how one go about actually solving them. It's a differential equation that will tell us the momentum and position of a particle as a function of the proper time of the particle. So when you solve that, you'll have this four vector, say, contravariant components as a function of proper time. And also, of course, you get the momentum components as a function of proper time, provided the fields are assumed to be known and not changed. The fields experienced by the charged particle are not changed. They're supplied by extra currents and charges out there. We'll assume they are specified everywhere in time and space before you start solving for this trajectory. By the motion of q through space. That's an assumption we're making here. In a sense, it's like the q going to zero limit is the only way you can really solve these equations. Okay. So it would work the same in Newtonian mechanics. You'd have to be given the fields as a function of position and time, right? So F alpha beta in these equations will be a function of x of tau that has to be pre-specified. And then you have a set of equations you can solve to obtain the trajectory, and if you want it, the momentum should come out too. And looking ahead, I forget what chapter is that. I'm thinking we will get hopefully to that before the end of the course. When you start shaking a charge, it does send out its own fields, right? It does accelerated charges radiate. So this assumption is questionable at times. And you have to worry about that. if you design one day, one of you, a free electron laser facility like at LCLS. Are you doing any experiments at LCLS?
They did some. I wasn't involved.
Free electron laser. Then you'll have to think about this stuff. Okay, let's see. Okay, I have 8 minutes. The next thing I want to talk about is, we've set up all the machinery that makes the Lorentz transformation of the fields straightforward, but we haven't actually talked about the physics, which is actually pretty dramatic when you have the fields in some reference frame and now you start moving faster and faster, close to the speed of light, how those fields change. It's pretty amazing, some of the stuff that happens, I think. So that's really the topic of this section of the text. Let's now look into the details of the Lorentz transformation of the fields. So immediately, since we start with our anti-symmetric field tensor, which we can also write if we like in terms of the potentials, this is one of the easiest ways to remember why it's anti-symmetric. Right, then taking the, to go from the fields from frame K to a frame K prime that moves at velocity V relative to K, we can just, in one line, write down that transformation. The new field tensor, its contravariant components have to be the contraction lambda alpha gamma. We have to contract on both indices. So we have a second Lorentz transformation, lambda beta delta, contracted with F gamma delta. And in matrix notation, that means F prime is lambda F lambda transpose. And lambda, you recall, for a general proper Lorentz transformation, this is a 4x4 matrix you can get by exponentiating this matrix minus omega dotted into the S vector that we defined, a vector of four matrices, four 4x4 matrices, minus the boost vector, which has the boost along x, y, and z, dotted into the boost three boost matrices. The exponential of that matrix is lambda. The Mathematica notebook I gave you, if you give the three components of omega, which define your rotation axis you're going to rotate about, and the magnitude says how much about that axis you're going to rotate. That's omega. And you can calculate the boosts along x, y, arbitrary x, y, and z. That Mathematica notebook evaluates that matrix. And you can plug it in to formulas like this. So just to do one example, Well, I want to talk about the physics of this, and I'm not going to have time, so let me maybe postpone that till next time. And then we'll talk about the incredible things, how the fields change so dramatically if you start cranking up close to the speed of light. Let's stop there. I hope you won't feel cheated if those 3 minutes of lecture. You can handle it. That's true. Or maybe it's all adds up to zero. What?
It's
homogeneous. Homogeneous. Come on.
Is that the actual way you say it?
Yeah. Yeah, everyone coming from the Midwest likes to say homogeneous. That's how we grew up talking about homogeneous milk. But physicists, which we are now, all of us, say homogeneous. Actually, I never checked the dictionary. Did you?
Nope.
I hope I'm right.